You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 54 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I have a guest with me today, Hannah Davies, and we are going to talk about Hirschsprung's, and we're going to talk about your son and your story about his Hirschsprung's journey. Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for agreeing to come on. I think we spoke earlier about your son, Jasper, who has Hirschsprung's. And we'll probably start, I guess, from the very beginning, because this is quite a unique story. Certainly one that I haven't necessarily come across in the 53 other episodes that I've done. Would you like to take us really from the beginning?
Yeah. So he was born. And as we know, Hirschsprung's is, you know, you have it from birth. He was our firstborn, which I think retrospectively looking back, I would have done things differently now I've had two children. Like I feel like I would know more. But he was born, he was 2 days late. Sorry to talk to you about birth because you're a guy.
But go for it.
His birth was totally fine. It was, you know, relatively quick-ish. She was four or five hours, which is pretty bloody good. There were no medical warning signs at all. But straight from the outset, he threw up after his first feed. And it was like a kind of blacky, green, yucky. And I was a bit like, oh, that's weird. And the midwives were like, oh, it's because he was quite a quick birth. So, like, he's just got a bit of, like, kind of not trauma, but he's a bit like, from the quick birth. Nothing to worry about. And I was like, okay, fine. Retrospectively, warning sign number one. Then he didn't pass his meconium poo, so the sticky poo. He didn't pass that. I think he passed it around 36 hours, where it's meant to be pretty bloody quickly. And if it's after 42 hours or whatever, it's flagged as Hirschsprung's. But his was just before that, and he passed this poop. And then I had lost a lot of blood, so we had to stay in for 4 or 5 days. And throughout that time, like, his latch was tricky. He had a recessed jaw, so we had to have a, like, cranial osteopath. That might be what they're called. Like, adjust his jaw. So boob feeding was really tricky. So he went on to formula pretty quickly. I was pumping for ages, and the midwife was like, you're killing yourself, don't follow her. So we went on to formula, which then became the excuse for the next chunk of time of medical illnesses. So it's like his poo. We never once with Jasper had baby poo. And he was my first baby. So I am now having had a loosely normal child, Rue, his brother. I now know what baby poo is. We never had that with Jasper. We had rock solid poos that he would cry to come out. Often, like, I would actually, like, just pull it out, and it was like a pencil. It was rock solid. And I would yank these poos out of him. And he would be sick after every feed. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, baby's always sick. Oh, you know, like, and he wasn't like that. He would literally drink and projectile vomit after. And everyone was like, oh, babies just do that. And I was like, okay, again, my firstborn, I'm no expert. We went and got him weighed every week and then every 2 weeks. Like, we were so on it. And I would always say, like, oh, you know, he keeps being sick. Oh, it's because he's formula fed. Oh, his tummy's quite distended. Oh, he's just formula fed. Do bicycle kicks. They don't work if a kid has Hirschsprung's. Bicycle kicks are so we kind of, I kept asking, and everyone was like, it's fine, it's fine. sometimes he would throw up and it would be like a greeny colour. And they're like, yeah, it's just the formula. Or he might have a little infection. And I was like, okay, like, seems a bit weird. Then at 5 months old, he was sick. I remember because it was snowy. No, it wasn't. No, second time was snowy. First time we went to hospital, I was like, he hasn't pooed in 2 weeks. Like, surely this isn't normal. His tummy was literally so swollen. You could see veins all on it. He was like withering in pain. And we went to the hospital, and this lovely lady at our local hospital, which is Royal Surrey in Guildford, she is the pediatric gastro person. And she was like, I think he has this thing called Hirschsprung. And she was like, but we can't touch him because they're not a children's hospital. And they were like, I'm going to send you to a children's hospital because I think he needs a biopsy. And we were like, okay, like, this seems like we're making progress. This wasn't his first hospital trip at this point. So I was really pleased that we had like had someone that thought it might be something. And we went to, I think we were waiting on a bed at either Great Ormond Street, the other one in London, I can't remember what it's called, Southampton or Brighton. And we were gunning to Southampton because my brother-in-law lives there. So we were like, oh, it'd be really easy. We could stay, like, logistically, it's fine. But I was like, but actually, like, wherever has a spot for him. So we got in an ambulance. We were taken down to Brighton, which was a very new, shiny, pretty hospital. And we were like, oh, yeah, this is great. There's, like, surgeons and people that know what might be wrong with him. And we were there, I think, for about a week. In that time, he had had 5 suppositories, which you're meant to only have, I think, over the age of 4. And he was 5 months old. And I was like, I don't care. Like, if you think this can help him and get this poo out, which is so clearly in here, then crack on. Like, I'll sign whatever you need. Let's make my baby, like my firstborn, happy. And literally the nurses would come in, they'd put the suppository up, and then half an hour later they're like, anything? I'm like, no. And they come back in, anything? You're like, oh, we're gonna have an explosion. Nothing. And I was like, is it a bit weird that he doesn't poo? They were like, it is a bit, yeah. And then we had this surgeon come in who was this giant man, and he was very like, I'm here to save the day. And he was like, oh, you know, your kid's thriving. And I was like, no, like, he's got a lovely colour about him. Jasper is naturally just really tanned. We don't know why. He looks like he has some kind of blonde, curly haired, tanned, beautiful little boy. We don't know why he's so tanned, but pretty sure the milkman wasn't tanned either. So he looks like, physically he looked healthy other than his really bulging stomach, and he was a happy, content kid. Like, he didn't cry, he was very calm constantly, which retrospectively all of these things were actually warning signs. But we were like, oh, we've got a baby that literally doesn't make a noise. He just sits there and struggles to poo, but he just sits there. And then the man was like, oh, we're not gonna... Eventually Jasper pooed when we were there, as you would expect, and it was massive, and his tummy literally deflated like a balloon. And then the surgeon was like, yeah, no, I don't think it's worth doing the biopsy. And he was like, the biopsy on a baby is, you know, quite a procedure, and we don't think that risk of him being, you know, put to sleep and things is worth it, because I'm pretty sure he hasn't got the Hirschsprungs. So we were like, okay. And in our medical note, which we got back for various reasons, in our medical notes, it had said that he wrote down, he was like, overcautious, first-time parents. I've told them to give, when they're weaning Jasper, to give him apple juice because it will help him poo. And I've advised them on, like, nutritional choices for when they wean him to help him poo. Right. Okay, great. So we then left there thinking we knew what was going on. And we had to go back 2 weeks later, and it was the new year, and he was like, you know, you're still our patient, you know, don't worry, anything happens, just come back. And at New Year, and I remember it because we were at our friend's house and it was mad. He was asleep and we went upstairs to go to bed, and he had literally pooped through his nappy all over the travel cot. Like, literally, he was just laying in a bed of poo. Like, I'd never seen anything like it. I you couldn't pick him up because he was so covered. And I was just like, what the hell? And like, our friends, bless them, like, came and we all like cleaned him up, and they had had a kid already, so they had like everything he could ever need there. And we sort of cleaned him up, and I was like, do you know what? We're not going to stay. Like, I'm just going to take him home because this seems really weird. So I took him home, and we were going to call the hospital, but we were due back something like 3 days later. So I was like, do you know what? Let's just mark this down as there's been a bit of a problem, and we'll talk to him on Wednesday or whatever it was. And when we got there, again, Jasper was just like, and I said, I was like, you know, he hasn't pooed a lot since we were last here, but we also had this like mammoth poo explosion. And it's not baby poo. It's not, you know, easy to clean. It's like sticky, thick, slimy poop. But I was like, it wasn't like a little poo explosion. It was literally, it covered a whole cot, plus sides, up past his head, like he was laying in the kind of coffin of poo. And the guy was like, oh yeah, don't worry, like baby poos are totally to be expected. You know, he's thriving, we're gonna sign you off. So I was like, oh okay, fine. So he signed us off, and that basically meant that then for the next 2 years, every time we went back to Royal Surrey, and bless Royal Surrey, like, they really cared and they were invested in finding out what was wrong. But as far as they were concerned, a pediatric surgeon had said Jasper didn't have Hirschsprung's. Therefore, what did this child have? So they were constantly like, we don't really know. Like, and I think before we found out he had Hirschsprung's, we'd been to hospital 11 times. And we had been to various hospitals because Jasper's not only a Surrey-based ill kid. We had one time we were going up to Yorkshire to see my sisters-in-law who live up there. We were driving up and we got as far as Nottingham. And it was February. I don't know why we always do this in winter, but it was February. It was freezing cold. He had like an insane temperature. He was literally red in the face, sweating. And I was like, something's wrong. He's still projectile vomiting after every feed. So he's been sick all over his clothes. He was literally in a nappy. I had like a coat, a scarf, a hat on. It was freezing cold. There was ice and snow outside. And he was in a nappy because he was so hot. And I was like, this isn't normal. And I called 999, and the ambulance came to the petrol station that we'd called in at service station, and they took him over to Nottingham Hospital, and they were like, oh yeah, he's just got a really bad infection. Obviously now with Hirschsprung's, you kind of know all the infections that come with it. And they just, again, give him shed loads of antibiotics, then he's fine. And my sister-in-law is a nurse, and her husband is an ambulance man, a paramedic. So I was like, hey, yeah, that emergency guy. So I was like, actually, I'm really comfortable with us continuing our journey, because actually there are two people that we're living with when we get there who will be great at this. So they came and they looked after us and looked after Jasper. And this was kind of like something that happened all the time. Then the day we find out, so Jasper's now 2.5. He is also, like, in our NCT group, he is the shortest, which you wouldn't think is weird, other than the fact that I'm quite tall and my husband's 6'4". So why our son was considerably shorter than every other child, he would never make a noise. He wouldn't speak. At 2.5, he was walking, but he still didn't really talk. He wouldn't play on a playground. He was like, you expect toddlers to be a bit chaotic and mad and loud, and he wasn't that. He would literally, you'd sit there, he would eat everything, bless him, much to, you know, the swell of his tummy. And he would just kind of potter around and occasionally would cry that his tummy hurt. And then it was to the stage where me and my husband would just find ways of getting poop out of him. So like I would get tweezers and pull them out, or like we would try and like bend his legs up, and I could see like rock solid poo in the way, and I would just grab it. Like, it was such a weird first time parent experience that you're like, well, like, no one's helping and my kid needs me, and I'm pretty sure you're medically not meant to stick, you know, like a bobby hair clip up there to try and get his poo out, but no one's helping me and he can't poo. So this became like part of our routine, which in itself is mental. And then one cold again.
Another one.
February day. I think this is literally my three Februaries of having him. So yeah, he was two and a half. And he again was like crying in pain. Couldn't go to the toilet, like still in nappies, because I was like, I don't know what to do here. And he was like screaming in pain, and he just kept like rubbing his tummy, going, oh, like that. And I was like, oh my God, like, what do we do? And I was like, I can't bother to go to hospital because that's at this point. But it was meant, no. And I was like, I don't want to wait and go tomorrow, because what if we're snowed in? Because we do live in the country, in the countryside. And I was like, oh, let's just go, because knowing our luck, he will need to go in the morning and we won't be able to go. So let's just get there. The ward are lovely. They all at this, they know us. So they always find space for us. Like, I got a bag and I got his like favorite blanket. He was in his pajamas. I put him in a onesie. Got his blanket, and I think I had that was it. There was no change of clothes, there was no nothing. He had like some sacks and some toys and a book, the Grappolo, which is our hospital book. Off we go to hospital, and we see this man in out of hours clinic, and he's like, I don't care that your son's in pain, why is his tummy like that? And I was like, oh no, like he pooed 2 days ago, this is a good tummy for him. And the guy was like, I can't let you go. He was like, I'm not bothered about the fact he's in pain. We can make pain go away. And he was like, I can't let you leave with a tummy like that. And I don't know who this man was. I've never seen him again. He was some random out of hours GP at the hospital. And he was like, you're going to stay up on the ward. And I was like, okay, fine. So off I go up to our normal ward. Like, hi, everyone. Remember?
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And we were there, I think, for about a week with them again, trying to get poo out of him, trying to find a bed for him somewhere else. Natasha, the original gastro lady, came back in and was like, this is Jasper, right? And I was like, yeah, like it is. And she was like, the Hirschsprung's kid. And I was like, well, yeah, but they said it wasn't Hirschsprung's. She was like, he has Hirschsprung's. She was like, every part of my being, I think they got it wrong. And she was like, right, we're not going to Brighton again. Let's find you a new hospital. So I was like, oh, okay. And this went on, and they were managing his pain and trying to, I think he was pooing sometime. They gave us Bless and they gave us lactulose. So I was like, oh, darling, I think that's a bit gentle for what we need, but thanks. But eventually, like, he would sometimes poo, and like when they were rock hard, I was getting the nurses and the pediatricians in and being like, this, like, I literally pull it out, like, I don't know what to do. And they were like, pull it out, like, do whatever you need to do to get this kid more comfortable. Then we couldn't get a bed for ages, and I basically, my kind of funny easygoing demeanor was slightly deteriorating. And I just started crying at them. And my dad at this point, and this now caveat to this is I totally don't agree with this, that my dad emailed our MP, his MP for his local area, who happens to be Mr. Jeremy Hunt, and emailed him and was like, this child is in your constituency. This is where we're at with it. He's really unwell. We need a bed. Can you do something? And an hour and a half later, we were being sent up to St. George's. And I was like, in no circumstance should this have been our way to St. George's? Like, and it kind of pained me that I'm very grateful that we were helped, but we should have been helped without that. That's my caveat for that. We'll move on. The opera went to St. George's. We, at this stage, Jasper was being sick. He had been ill by mouth for the whole week because they were like, he'll go into surgery as soon as we get there. So let's just keep him ill by mouth. So we got to St. George's, which is obviously a very busy London hospital, and they put us in A&E. And I was like, he needs to go on the ward. There's a bed for us. We know there's a bed. And he hasn't eaten in like a week now. He's nil by mouth. He's been on IV. We haven't got our IV with us because we drove stupidly instead of going in an ambulance. And he had just been being sick on me constantly. So I was covered in sick. He was covered in sick. It was like gone midnight. I was holding him in a really busy London A&E. And I was just like, I was also 8 months pregnant. They were literally like, oh, she's either going to give birth out of stress. Like, she's also incredibly uncomfortable because I'm propping up a 2.5-year-old on my pregnant 8-month belly, covered in sick. My husband's trying to like help, but Jasper very much wanted mummy. And at this stage, I'm like, whatever. I feel like I've, you know, died anyway. And we weren't being seen in A&E. And we went through the bit where they first talk to you. I can't remember what it's called. Triage. We went through triage and they put us back. And I was like, we don't need to be here. Like, there is a bed. They know we're coming. Like, why are we still in here? And again, my like chilled out, don't worry. Like, we don't want to be getting anyone's way. That totally left the building. And I literally Googled the children's ward. I rang them and was like, have you got a bed for Jasper Davis? And they were like, yeah, well, you know, we're expecting him to do it. And I was like, fine. Picked up my sicky child and I marched on up to the ward, walked in, and they were like, what are you doing? Like, you need to wait back in A&E for us to come and get you. Like, you need to be seen by our registrar. And, and I literally stood there pregnant, covered in sick, and burst into tears. I then just sat on the floor and I was like, I'm not moving. Also, St. George's is very big and it did take me quite a while to waddle my child up to the ward. So I was like, there is no way physically I can carry him back down to carry him back up again. My husband now had totally lost his sense of humor and he is more on the mean side than me. So I was just like sat there crying. I was like, I can't, like, I rang you and you said you've got a bed and they were like, yeah, but we thought you were the nurse. And I was like, well, I'm not a nurse. So then I think they felt a bit bad for me. And the registrar was like, I will see them here. Like, this is fine. We went on this ward and she put her finger up his bottom and she was like, I just want to see what I can feel. And I was like, so she did. And she put her finger up his bottom and pulled her finger out and 2.5 kilograms of poo came out. All over me, all over her, all over the walls. So yeah, we were all totally covered in poo. She was mortified because she was like, if I had any inclination that this is what would happen, I would have put us in a treatment room. We were on a ward with all of these other kids. And honestly, like those blue sheets of privacy, just covered in poo. And all of us, where we had gone to A&E, he'd been weighed. So straight away afterwards, she was like, let's weigh him. And it was 2.5 kilograms of poo. She, our registrar, Kerry, was furious with Brighton. She is like red in the face, covered in poo, angry, storms off. I can then see her because we're right by the reception. See her. She calls up Brighton. She's going mental down the phone to them being like, this child has just arrived. You've neglected him. Like screaming down the phone at Brighton. And me and my husband, still covered in poo, were like totally shell-shocked by everything. Jasper, meanwhile, happy as Larry. Obviously, the poor boy felt so great. I've got this video of him and he's in his nappy. And he's just like, like the middle of the night on this ward, poo everywhere. And he is thrilled that obviously, like, he doesn't feel terrible. Whole thing was mad. So we were then at St. George's for another week. And then they were like, right, he's, you know, we're pretty sure he's got a Hirschsprung. We're going to do a biopsy. He's going to go into surgery. Good thing he's not by mouth. Still, the poor kid hasn't eaten in what feels like an eternity. And he went in for surgery and they said they were doing the biopsy. And if they found that he did have Hirschsprungs, they would go ahead and give him a stoma then and there. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, I had absolutely no bloody idea what a stoma was. He gave me a bit of paperwork to sign. I blindly signed it because that's just who I am as a person. Don't get me to sign anything. And I, after like, we had the beeper for his surgery and I was a bit like, you know, you have to kiss them and say goodbye just in case they don't come back round. And you're like, oh, this is a bit more serious than I thought. And when he came out, bless him, he was all obviously totally out of it. And he had the stoma. And I was like, what the is that? And they were like, oh, this is the stoma. This is what we talked to you about. And I was just kind of looking at them blankly like, I have not slept. I am heavily pregnant and I have no idea what you're talking about. And now my son has a bag attached to him and like a little red thing. And bless them, they were like, right, you are not changing a stoma bag until you can sink. We're going to introduce you to our stoma care people. I was like, okay. In the meantime, like texting my parents being like, he's got a stoma. Like, what is going on? My dad and my parents, who obviously being older and wiser, are like, stoma's great, don't worry. And me and my husband then learned how to be stoma parents. And an annoying thing is, and I don't know if this has changed over the years, is that you either have like preemie and baby stoma bags or you have adult. There is nothing in between. So we had an adult bag on a 2.5-year-old, which meant that we were very leaky. Nothing ever fit because obviously he's like this big and the stoma bag's like this big. So we had quite a lot of teething troubles with it. But he was a different child. And within 2-3 months, I would say, he was 3 inches taller. He was talking. He was playing. It was as if he had had a total different personality transplant. He was energetic. He was like a toddler. And it was such an insane from where he was. And I remember Kerry saying, our registrar, she was like, when you're really poorly, your body tries to deal with one thing at a time. And because it was constantly trying to get like poo for him, it didn't give him the attention to help him grow, to help his speech, to help all of those things. His body, its whole effort was trying to get him to go to the toilet. So honestly, the next 3 months was just mad. Like, he was, yeah, it was amazing. And we were supported. He was at nursery now, and he was supported by like the most incredible nursery team who were just on it with him. And he had prolapses constantly, which when he really couldn't communicate still, it was really hard. Like, I didn't know if they hurt. I didn't know. He would just say big red. So we called his stoma red and it was little red. And then when he prolapsed, it was big red. And that's how he would communicate it to us. And I'd get a call from nursery being like, Hannah, Jasper's gone very quiet. And he's just sat down and he's just saying big red and mummy. And I was like, I'm coming. Like, there's nothing you can do about this. And we had maybe 3 trips to hospital with his prolapses when I was like, his intestine is hanging out of him. Like, what the hell is this? Nobody warned us about this. And then eventually I realized they're not going to do anything about it anyway. And our friend, who was a nurse as well, happened to care for elderly people who quite often have stomas. So she was like, ring me, like, I'm all over this. And she was brilliant with like tips and tricks and, you know, wrap it in sugar, like put sugar on your gauze and wrap it round and it will suck the liquid out and then it will shoot itself back in. So all of this stuff we would do to get the prolapses back in. But bless him, when it then meant that like on a playground, he wouldn't run around or play too much because if he was too energetic, he would then kind of be punished with a prolapse. So he was still physically not a rough and tumble kid, let's say. And then he had it reversed just before starting school. So he had a few, I call it the blue dye test. I don't know what it is technically. when they put the blue in and they see where it travels through his intestine.
Yeah, is it?
I can't remember what that.
Iodine? Is it iodine?
I think it might be. I was like the blue stuff, like put the blue stuff.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, so he had that, and basically where his intestine was so swollen with his 2.5 kilograms of poo that he'd been carrying for 2.5 years, they said that basically your intestine's meant to be no bigger really than a 50p piece, and his, you could have fit tin cans down. And they were like, the fact that his bowel hasn't already burst and him had sepsis, they were like, I do not understand how he is still live and kicking. And that's why Kerry, the registrar, was so angry, because she was like, this bowel is going to burst at any second. And that is entirely because you guys decided not to do a biopsy when he was 5 months old. So he has now had 2 years more of not going to the toilet, of being in agony, of stunted growth, all of these things, because you made that decision on the fact he has a tan and that he's happy, like he's a lovely boy. Like, that's not medically, this having 5 suppositories up a 5 months old and them not pooing is a bit of a red flag. But hey, give him sugar, apple juice, and he'll poo. Like, yeah, bullshit. So then we had it reversed. Just before the Valentine's Day, another February. God, what is with it? It
happens in February for you.
February is not a great month for me. And I remember this song because it was just before Valentine's Day, and he had his stoma reversed, and they were amazing at St. George's. Big up St. George's. They have been nothing but absolutely incredible with him from the minute we saw them up. Like, we're still with them now. They're absolutely fabulous.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We went in, they reversed it, it went really well, really smooth. He recovered really quickly. We had a few hairy nights with him coming off of his like pain relief and all of that stuff, and he was hallucinating, and it was a bit of a wild ride, but nothing that they could have done. Like, they were just doing their best to manage his pain. And then we get out of hospital, back home, he has his first night in bed. I'm like, oh, and I remember because I was documenting it on Instagram, being like, oh my god, like, we're home. He hasn't got a stoma. He's doing really well. We're so happy. Valentine's Day tomorrow. You know, John's off. We're going to do something as a family. Like, oh, this is so great. And we woke up in the morning and I went and got him, and he was sick, like having his breakfast. And I was like, oh, this is weird. And I went upstairs and I'd seen that in the night he had obviously been sick on his pillow, but hadn't woken up to like let us know. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, he's been sick on me again. It's always me. And he's been sick in his bed in the night, and we didn't know. And I was like, oh, this doesn't sit too well. And then I was like, have some water. And then he was sick again. And I was like, called up St. George's. And luckily, because we'd literally just left there, they knew who we were. And the surgeons were doing the rounds. And we spoke to one of Miss Parker, who's our surgeon, one of her team. And I was like, hi, it's Jasper's mum. He was sick in the night, and he can't hold anything down. He keeps being sick. Man, I can't remember what his name was. He was like the deepest voice I've ever heard. And he just went, you need to go to Royal Surrey. You don't have time to get to St. George's. I will call ahead. Go now. And I was like, boom. So we're all still covered in sick in our pajamas. And I was like, if he says we haven't got time to get to St. George's, we have got to fly to Guildford. So my husband, any excuse really to break the speed limit, he's all over it. So he zoomed us there, threw us out at the A&E entrance while he went and parked. They were standing outside A&E waiting for us, put Jasper on a bed, straight into A&E. And they were like shaking, trying to get like his IV drips, the cannulas in, because obviously where he had had surgeries, he had holes all over him, the poor kid. And they were a bit like, they were trying to find his veins and they couldn't. And I was seeing them like visibly shake trying to do it. And I was like, okay, my kind of happy-go-lucky exterior covered in stick has kind of gone now. And they moved us up into the treatment room on the ward that's right opposite reception. And I later found out the closer you are to reception, the more the concerned they are about you. And he was right opposite reception with the doors open. And he, I've got this picture of him that I keep on my phone for like a reality check of how ill a child can be. And he literally looks like Day of the Dead. Like his eyes are all shot. He's so pale and he's got like the dark all around his eyes. Like he looks like a skeleton. And I was like, oh, hold on. Like now visibly he's not this like tan, beautiful boy. Like he literally looks kind of dead. And they were coming in and none of them could get the cannula in. And they were shaking. He had holes everywhere. And I was a bit like, give it to me and I'll jam it in his arm. Like, come on, team. And they ended up getting this other lady who was one of the adults. She wasn't a ped. She came in. She was like, you don't need to know who I am. You're literally never going to see me again. We need to get this cannula in. And she just jammed it in, attached the IVs, jammed in another one, and then just left. I have no idea who she was. And they were like, right, okay, we don't know what it is. We've got St. George's who were on the phone to them constantly, basically telling the team in Surrey what to do because he's still not five, so they still can't touch him. And yeah, they were like, we don't know what it is. So we're basically killing an ant with a tank. Like, we don't know what this is, but if it is bad, like, we don't have time. So he had about a day of IVs and it, whatever the infection was, we don't know if it was the enterocolitis thing or not. But they smashed it out of him. And then we went in the next day for some more and then they signed him off. They were like, yeah, whatever it was, like we got rid of it. But that was a wild ride. Yeah. And again, Natasha for the pediatric gastro came back in and was like, Jasper, we've not got anything like this. And she was like, yeah, we didn't know what it was. But St. George's basically said, we have to try and combat any infection that it could be all at the same time because you can't wait with it. So that was hairy. And then again, historically, when I got the notes back, he had potassium levels or something were like well below what is safe and he was knocking on death's door. So pleased that we made it for another day. And then lockdown happened. So he started school. No stoma, no laxatives, which we should have had, but lockdown. And yeah, since then we went back and he went on to laxatives. So he had 12 Mobacol when we first got on because they were like, oh yeah, we've got a bit of a backlog. This is our bad. And it, you know, COVID and video appointments aren't that helpful when your kids just had surgery. And then more recently, he's still on Mobacol. But it stopped working a little bit and he's had mirroring and they have now we do the washouts, the peri, what is it? I've literally got the paperwork here because we've just had it. Peri, I don't even know what it is. The thing where you put it up his bum and you squirt water. Yeah. So he's doing that every day to combat, I think, basically where his bowel had the ability to expand so much. Although it had shrunk down to a good size, it's like muscle memory. It knows how big it can get. So although his poop was passing with the Mobacol, so he's having 2 Mobacol a day, and he would poop morning, lunch, and evening, and was fine. All the poop that was lining the sides over like the past few years, because he's 8 now. So since he was about 4, he's been lining his slightly baggier intestine with poop. So now he's having these washout things. Which it was weird because obviously he's now 8 and when you're 2, you kind of get away with doing more stuff without them really noticing or remembering. Whereas you had to talk to him about it. And obviously for him, it's very alien having something stuck up his bum where I'm thinking, babes, like my finger's been up your bum. I've had a hair up your bum. You've had the end of a biro up your bum. Like the things that have been up your bum, try and get poo out, kid. This thing, this lovely medical thing is great. Like, but actually he's been absolutely brilliant and he is so much happier and content, and also because he knows he's not going to then have pooey accidents at school and stuff, so he's he's very pro it, and also he gets to play on Nintendo for half an hour while Boo comes out, so he sees that as a bit of a win. But yeah, that's kind of his summary, his where he's at. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you ever so much for that. That's
wild ride.
What a story. And just as we have a few minutes left here. Wow. So many questions. Which one to ask? I guess one thing that I will say in terms of the future. What do you see sort of in Jasper's future?
I would say the life of a normal child, to be honest. I think he'll always be medicated in some way, whether it's the water up his bum or the laxative. He was short segment, so 25% was removed. And he is definitely on the constipation side of things. But like, he's super tall now. He's one of the tallest in his class as a summer born. Like, he's back up. He's totally flourishing. He's like the sportiest kid I've ever met. He's got a rippling six pack, which was always a thing. They were like, oh, if you've got Hirschsprungs, you can't do sit ups. It's like, watch my kid. He's a mad athlete. And actually, like, other than at school constantly reminding them that he can go to the toilet whenever he needs to and he does not need to wait for a bloody task, other than that, people wouldn't know. So like his friends at school that weren't with him at his first school, they don't know. He does swimming. He's obviously got scars. He's never, ever, ever had any kind of, I was really worried about bullying and stuff. No, not at all. He's very articulate with why he's got the scars, what Hirschsprungs is. They're learning about his dietary, like the intestines and stuff. And he was like, I haven't got all my intestines myself, didn't push my food down. Like, didn't delay. So, on it. So I, to be honest, I do see, like, obviously with Hirschsprungs, it throws up wild cards every now and again.
Yeah.
But I don't foresee his, like, I don't see anything bad about his future. Like, every curveball we get is dealt with and we kind of take it, he takes it in a stride, and he's not behind on anything anymore. He's where he should be as an 8-year-old. Lovely.
And you mentioned taking lots of curveballs. I think you've taken every type of curveball that could possibly ever have been thrown at you all at the same time. So that's
weird. Like things like when you've got kids and they get the like DMV bug, which is like when you get poo and diarrhea 48 hours. My non-Hirschsprungs boy, 48 hours on the dot, nothing. Jasper, it's like 2 weeks. And it's like, oh my God. Like things like that, you're like, you get reminded that, you know, Hirschsprungs isn't super normal and it does just like do weird stuff. And you once you've done one of everything that Hirschsprungs throws up, you feel like, okay, like, come on, what's next? I'm ready.
Fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for coming on, for sharing Jasper's story. It's quite remarkable. And again, just a caveat, I guess, to this as well. We're recording this pre-Christmas and we'll go out in January and we are coming up to a February. So I wish you and your family the very best February.
Thanks.
As we're only, as this comes out, we're only about half a month away from February. So I do wish...
Let you know.
Yes, I do wish you all the best February. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you so much for coming on. And I wish you all the best in the future.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.